Okay. We're all online, ready to go. All right, welcome everybody. Welcome to Optimizing SQL Server for SharePoint. Thanks for coming along. Pretty much the last session of the day. Hope you have fun. Wayne and I have certainly enjoyed putting it together, so I hope that you take away some good benefits and come and find us later and ask lots of questions. So I'm going to get straight into it. I'll start by introducing myself. My name is Pat Martin. I've known Wayne for a long time.
A lifetime.
Feels like a lifetime. So he put this bio slide together for me. I won't go through it in great detail. I do have a small farm. I do keep sheep. Quite why Wayne has got the handcuffs with the sheep is a bit of a concern, but in New Zealand we do say the sheep are scared, so watch out for that. And the mountain biking, Wayne took me mountain biking in Rotorua. I'd never been mountain biking before, and there was a big red sign with some, you know, crossbones on it and three diamonds, and Wayne just said, "Oh, I'll go down there, Pat," and I thought, yeah, he's my mate, nothing can go wrong. And I had a little trip to the hospital, so he's a really good mate. So with that, I'll pass you on to Wayne.
Okay, so my name's Wayne Ewington. I mean, if you're in the presentation prior, been with Microsoft Consulting Services for about 14 years, got a number of certifications like my friend Pat. Contact details are up there. I did put my own bio slide together, so a bit of a roughneck photo of myself. I like SharePoint, I am a Kiwi. I'm a Lone Ranger because I'm part of the Worldwide Centre of Excellence, which is called the Rangers. My demolition hat is because I have been doing house renovations for about the last 18 years. I actually want to put that on a hook because I've actually retired from doing house renovations. We just recently moved into a brand new house. The pie reference is because my friend Pat here calls me the person who ate all the pies. Putting on the old weight a little bit. I used to be into running, so thank you, Pat.
Hasn't changed, Wayne.
Cool. So basically what we're going to cover today is looking at how do we actually optimize SQL Server or optimize SQL Server from a SharePoint perspective. So really the kind of main goal that we want to have out of this is that we can have meaningful conversations between the SharePoint admins and the DBAs. So quite a lot of the times when you start, you know, configuring up your SharePoint environments, the SharePoint admin becomes the DBA, okay? Or conversely, the DBA kind of thinks, why is the SharePoint admin person asking all these funny things? And you kind of get this mismatch of conversation. So the idea behind this is that I've got my good friend here, Pat, very, very strong on SQL. He can be my DBA counterpart today.
Sounds good. I'll take on
the role of the SharePoint admin, and we're going to try and insert the babblefish there and try and have meaningful conversations. Mm. So hopefully, you know, come out of this understanding where the DBA is coming from and where the SharePoint admin is coming from. So just on that note, how many people here are DBAs? Wow. Okay. How many people here are SharePoint admins? How many? Keep your hand up if you're the same person.
I was going to ask that.
Okay. So you schizophrenic people must have a lot of interesting conversations with yourself.
Either you were SharePoint admins and you were standing in the wrong place when you got made database DBAs or the other way around. So.
And the other goal we want is to hopefully consolidate your knowledge and hopefully learn something new. So there may be stuff that you may have seen before, but hopefully there'll be some new stuff and some explanations as to why SharePoint works in peculiar ways. So,
I'm glad you said that, Wayne.
So what we're going to look at is kind of go through the different layers. We're going to look at it from the perspective of optimizing the server for a SQL perspective. Then we'll look at what can we do to optimize SQL Server. Then we're going to look at it, what do we need to do to SQL Server to optimize it for a SharePoint perspective? And because Pat's a bit of a SQL guy, he wants to do this, you know, crazy thing called database maintenance as well. So we're going to kind of look and explore a little bit behind that. So.
All right. So with that, I'll start with a little bit of a background to SQL Server and just some real basic things around configuring your environment for SharePoint and for SQL in general. So we spend a lot of time doing health checks with customers as part of our engineering group, maybe once every 2 or 3 weeks. So I've seen a lot of customers and a lot of SharePoint and a lot of SQL environments over the years. So very simply, separate drives for different purposes. So We do still insist on separate drives for TempDB, for the logs, for the database files, for your backup files. Don't store your backups on the same disk as your database drives. A lot of people do that. It's not smart. Keep the drive separate. Be careful of conversations with storage guys that say, we'll give you one disk, and behind the scenes there are lots of disks. That tends not to go too well either. So do keep the disks separate. Look out for database latencies. We want to see around 15 to 20 milliseconds latency for database drives, and we want to see around 2 milliseconds for the logs. These are very fixed database Microsoft requirements, and we don't have a lot. We don't publish a lot of do this, but that's one of them. So disk latency is very clearly specified in terms of what we need to see from SQL Server. I had a little chat with Ryan around prioritization, and SharePoint, I think, has some of its own perspectives on that as well. But really, in terms of your faster to slower disks here, TempDB needs to be isolated, it needs to be fast, and it needs to be striped across CPUs, and we'll talk more about that later on. All right, so that's just a very quick reminder.
But everyone does this, right?
Everyone does it, right?
Yeah, and especially in my virtualized environments as well.
Yeah, you've got lots of disks, right?
I have.
And you test the disk latency.
I did test the disk latency thing, whatever that is.
Yep. Excellent. I'm glad to see that. You don't get any deadlocks in your in your SharePoint environment either, right?
No.
Okay, I'm just checking.
No. I've got a bit of Victor's code running in my farm, so.
Yeah, right. We'll get back to that. All right, storage. Disk block size. So I don't want to bore the database folks too much because they know this, or they should know this. So SQL Server data pages are 8K in size. Unlike Oracle, where they get to make some choices around a page size, since around about SQL 7, we haven't been able to do that. Pages are 8K, that's it. SQL works in collections of 8 pages called extents when it's doing disk allocation. So very simply, if you match up the SQL Server allocation sizes to Windows allocation units, when you format a disk, life is going to work better. So it's a very simple and straightforward mechanism. So you really do want to format your disks with a 64K cluster allocation unit size. Things will just work better. And of course, this is not the default.
No.
So the default, Wayne has put a nice icon here on some of these slides. So if you just take the default when you format a drive, you're going to get 4K disk allocation units. So as you can imagine, the difference there between SQL's view of what constitutes an allocation or an extent and Windows in terms of disk allocation, you know, they don't match up, and you're going to get more activity on the disk than you need to when you're restoring or growing a database. So I'm sure everybody in SharePoint knows about this, and they allocate their disks at 64K, right?
Right, yep.
Okay, it's cool. All right.
So just a question. Who doesn't do this? They're too embarrassed to put their hands up.
There's a few sheepish hands here.
Yeah, but we have got swag to give away, so, you know.
All right. Moving along, just keep it moving here. We've got quite a few slides. Antivirus. So I see a couple of things out on SQL health checks. I will mention those a few times. Apologies for that. But I see things that just make SQL Server behave really poorly and things that cause a lot of damage. And two things that I see a lot that do cause problems with SQL. One is antivirus. And some antivirus are worse than others, but this probably isn't the time and place to mention that. But, you know, you just need to be very careful with antivirus, and you need to make sure that you exclude the files that Microsoft recommend that you exclude from your real-time scanning. And again, we have a list, a very prescriptive list. These are the file suffixes that you need to exclude from your real-time scan. If you're clustering, there's a couple of extra places that needs to apply to. It's not an easy conversation. You have to go to your security folks. You have to say, we're going to turn off real-time scanning for these file extensions. They're going to say, well, we're not too happy with you doing that. Are there some ways around it? And you'll need to have a conversation. You might need to make a bit of compromise and do some scheduled checks. But in many cases, if you don't turn this off, you'll get hurt pretty badly. Another thing to watch out for is third-party backup programs. But we're not kind of focusing on that. But again, just be very careful with backups that take place at the file level for the whole machine. That can cause some issues too. Any comments on antivirus, Wayne? Not really.
Don't worry about it.
Don't worry about it. You never get any security type issues or virus issues. It's all behind firewalls, right?
That's right, yeah.
Okay. BIOS power savings. So this is just a small snippet that's been turning up a lot recently in SQL Server health checks. This is one of the test cases that we run. There are some new BIOS power saving features in some of the newer Intel chips. They're smart in the sense that if nobody's talking to them, they turn themselves off. That's fine. When my wife's not talking to me, I turn myself off as well. Sometimes when she is talking to me, but we won't go there. So be careful with that. We don't recommend it. We don't recommend this auto sleep mechanism for a server. So don't use that. Turn that off and use the power saving mode.
So where do you find that, Pat?
It's in the BIOS.
In the BIOS.
It's a BIOS setup.
Okay.
I'm not going to go do it now.
Okay.
All right. The real reason that I would love to chat with Wayne today is to talk about patching. Who here carefully and lovingly keeps their patch servers up to date for all of their SQL boxes? One person, two, three, four people. So when we started the conversation, Wayne asked how many DBAs we had, and there were about 20, 25, and we've got two people that patch them. That's roughly the percentage I see when I travel. It's really not good. Web servers, beautifully patched. Database servers, never patched. Does that mean you don't get problems with database servers? Uh-uh. So patching, very important.
Very important.
Right?
Yeah.
Downtime, reboots, it's not easy. Scheduled tasks, 24/7 systems, but you still have to do it. It doesn't mean you just can't not do it. Okay, so maybe we'll switch over there, Wayne, into the other box. So just very, very quickly, we're not going to spend a lot of time on demos here, but formatting a disk. So I have a virtual machine running SQL Server 14, CTP1. I've added a disk to the virtual machine as a VHX file. I've just added this disk, so I now have a new disk that's presented. And I could either format it using Disk Manager, just right-click and say Format, or I can go to the command line here and format that drive. So this is just showing you this 64K cluster unit allocation. So your SAN admin, your storage guy, he's given you a disk for SharePoint for your database. You want to follow best practices and take tempdb and put it on a separate disk with a 64K cluster allocation unit size and go format it.
So just on this point, how many people here are using, virtualization to run a SQL? Okay, majority of people. Wow. Okay, so even in my own situation, my lab environments, simply by reformatting my drives that I've saved in the databases on can have a significant performance improvement just by doing this one thing. Okay. So the other consideration too is that if you're also using Azure, for example, once again you should format your drives with a 64K chunk allocation as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It does make a big difference. So we go ahead here and we format the drive, and then we'll have a new disk that's available for tempdb. So that's going ahead and doing that. In fact, we'll call it tempdb because now we've got a new disk, and we'll come back to that. We'll come back to that later on. Okay, so let's switch back there, Wayne.
Okay. Cool.
All right. Need some sunglasses.
Oh.
Did you bring some?
Oh, I forgot. I left them down there.
Okay, that's just a little bit around the server. There are a lot more things, but these are just some really, really key ones to watch out for. SQL optimization. So Wayne mentioned we were going to talk a little bit about SQL optimizations and managing SQL in terms of performance for SharePoint. So the hardest thing that you're going to have to deal with is memory management. CPUs, storage is the thing that usually gives us problems. So 90-odd percent of our premier support cases relating to SQL Server issues are I/O related, they're storage related. But memory's a tricky one to manage, and that's where you've got to give a bit of thought and decide, well, how much memory am I going to give to this machine that's running my SharePoint databases? Because this max memory, it takes care of something called the buffer pool. Data is cached, it's brought in from disk, it's kept in this buffer pool, and then SQL feeds out database pages from this buffer pool area. And the max server memory relates to the size of that of that buffer cache. So you need to decide how big is that going to be based on the amount of memory that I've got on my machine, because the default is dynamic memory allocation, which means that SQL can use all the memory on the machine. And it can, and it will, and I've seen it happen. And then nothing else gets to play because SQL's got all of it. So you do need to be a little bit careful, and, yeah. And we do recommend having a think about your Mac server memory. Having said that, so what am I going to set it to?
Just on that point, Pat. I mean, there was one customer I was working with, and you know, we noticed that SQL was kind of going up because it was virtualized. Right. We noticed the CPU going up, so we went, "Oh, great! We'll just kind of jump on that machine and see what's happening." Guess what?
Couldn't get in.
Couldn't get onto that machine. Could not log on because the Mac's memory hadn't been set, and it just went Pac-Man. Took up all the memory. Didn't have enough for us to actually log onto that box to have a look at it.
Did you use the dedicated admin connection to come in the back door?
Came in the back door eventually.
Very good. Okay, so you do have to think about it. So what kind of guidelines can we give you? There is an algorithm that's quite funky, a lot of detail in terms of number of threads and the size of the stack, depending on your architecture and so on. But far more simply than that, recommend to set to the total amount of memory on the machine. And then we just take away a certain amount over time that we've learned from experience. And we say here app overhead. That means the other things that are running on the box. However,
what are you doing on the box?
We shouldn't be running anything on the box, right? So this is a very key point, and we will return to it. If you have a SQL database server, that server should be dedicated for the use of the SQL database engine. There shouldn't be other stuff. There shouldn't be any stuff on there that the database engine doesn't require. So you may have some SharePoint dependencies. Wei may talk about that. But purely in terms of SQL Server, there shouldn't be other stuff running on the box other than SQL.
Yeah.
Okay.
So putting it on a domain controller?
I know that's the kind of thing you probably would do, Wayne, but I'd probably recommend against doing that.
Okay. Putting on the same box as SharePoint?
What's our minimum spec for this stuff? So, we do have a little bit of a rule of thumb. An 8-gig machine, we're probably going to give about 6-gig max memory. A 16-gig machine, we might start to turn a little bit down towards 12-gig rather than 14. If you want to be more scientific, there are algorithms. But we tend to leave at least 2 gigabytes for the OS to play. That's roughly what we do. But I do recommend setting it, especially if you're running on a cluster, if you're running multi-instances of SQL on that same machine. Now you have to consider your max memory footprint, because if you don't, your second instance may not have enough memory to...
So how do you know how to tweak it?
So we will show you that. We'll go and have a look at configuring that. It's a fairly straightforward thing to do.
Okay.
But it is something that you do need to think about, is the max memory that you're going to allocate. Okay, so just moving on, just a little bit conscious of time. So TempDB, there are lots of myths in the SQL Server world, and I'm sure there are in the SharePoint world as well, but there are lots of kind of fairy stories or folklore stories, and one of them is that if you have more than one transaction log file, then your system's going to run faster. And in fact, the opposite is true, because if you have more than one log file, there's only ever one logical log file. So if you have two physical files, the log file is circular and it has to maintain this dependency between two physically separate units of storage. So you'd get no benefit. You only get pain from having more than one file. So one log file, very clear. RAID 10, why? Because the transaction log is about protection and redundancy. Sure, it needs to be fast, but your log is your unit of recovery for your database. So it needs to be mirrored, and it needs to be protected. So you need to take good care of your transaction log. So RAID 10 is recommended. Pre-sized TempDB file. So I didn't know this. Wayne told me about this. So Wayne, why do I need to pre-size my TempDB file to 25% of my largest database?
Because that's what I was told to do.
There you go, pre-sized to 25%. So where did that come from?
That actually came through from the guidance came through from Bill Bayer. Okay. He's one of the product managers on that. So basically what he said there was that for your temp databases, you should really pre-grow it to 25% of your largest DB. Okay, so we're looking at this from a SharePoint farm perspective. Okay, so then you have to start looking at what are the sizes of your SharePoint databases.
Right.
Okay, so if you've got a 1 terabyte content DB, guess what size your temp DB should be? Okay, 250 gig, right? So just a rule of thumb means you need to grow that out.
I would imagine it's not so easy to calculate how big this content database is going to grow to, or
Potentially you can. You can do some capacity planning around it. So, okay. But just general guideline, you know, pre-grow it out to 25% of your largest database.
So anyone that's coming along to the session later for the MCMs for the panel to ask a question, you might be thinking this could be a reasonable one. We might kind of hang our hat on that one. Right? So auto-growth. Set auto-growth to a fixed size, less than 200 meg. Auto-growth you don't want to happen. So that, again, there's a conversation in the database world. Do I have auto-growth kick in as a percentage or as a fixed size? And there's a big discussion, percentage, fixed size. The answer is neither. You don't want auto-growth kicking in at times that you don't expect it to, because when auto-growth kicks in, it grows the file. Under normal conditions, it writes zeros to those extents that have been allocated, and it's a blocking operation. So your system will stutter. Your system will just quietly start to go to sleep, and you'll be doing something in SharePoint, and it will become unresponsive because your file is growing during your working day. How do you fix that? Well, the DBA has to be proactive. He has to have a management tool and a reporting tool that's watching the growth of these files and pre-sizing them in the right way. So it's not about how do we manage auto-growth, it's how do we prevent auto-growth from happening. That's our best practice. So don't get hung up on the percentage versus fixed size. And then the last point here, we're going to talk about spreading the number of tempdb files across CPUs. Okay. And just while we're on the topic of auto growth, if you don't turn on this flag, what can happen if one file happens to be larger than the other files when you resize them? Without this trace flag, when auto growth kicks in, that auto growth will happen to the largest file. And then you haven't got this kind of proportional growth striped across your files for tempdb. This trace flag will disable that behavior for the whole instance, not just for tempdb, and will auto growth in a parallel kind of symmetric way across those files that you've striped. So that's the use of this trace flag.
Cool.
So how many tempdb files should we have?
Well, it's meant to be based on the number of CPUs that you've got.
Very good. How many CPUs have we got?
So are you talking about sockets? Are you talking about, you know,
Numa nodes,
or are you talking about virtuals? Or what exactly are you talking about there, Pat?
Okay. All right. Well, you've all said that you virtualize SQL, or most of the folks in the room. I've been telling people for the last 2 years not to do that, so I kind of give up when a whole room of people tell me that they're doing it. So you kind of got me there. But CPUs... this is a pretty good picture. So we have a Numa node. So most servers these days are Numa machines. They group CPUs and memory banks together to get around this whole kind of front-side bus contention that earlier architectures suffered from. So you've got, say, 4 Numa nodes on a machine. Each one has a group of CPUs associated with it. So it has a socket. The socket has a number of cores. And then, again, the cores can have more than a one-to-one in terms of logical processes. You might be hyper-threading, for example, through those cores.
So how do you know which one to go with?
So the one you go with, you have a nice little select statement here. Select star from SysDMOS schedulers, or you can right-click on your instance name in Management Studio. But this is a good query, because this query will show me how many logical CPUs can SQL Server see. So now I can forget this whole conversation about what constitutes a CPU. And I just run this query because SQL Server has an operating system called the SQL OS that came in SQL 2005. And one of the things it does is it has its own scheduling capability and its own logical CPUs. So you run this query. You take all of the CPU scheduler IDs of the lower numbers, the higher numbers are for system processes. Yep. So this query tells me right here that I've got 4 logical CPUs.
So Moore's law hasn't applied yet?
Not quite yet.
Okay.
But it's coming.
It's coming, okay.
All right. So just to finish the slide very quickly and to answer Wayne's question, how many files should I have? So the same number of data files as CPUs. We haven't seen a great benefit above 8. I mean, there are getting to be machines now with very large numbers of CPUs. But in our testing, we haven't seen huge benefits above a file count of 8. So if you've really got a lot of CPUs, this is something that you're going to want to test. The whole point of this, because you should be asking, why do we have this rule, not just do it? And it's more interesting to know why you do it. And the reason you do it is when you create objects in tempdb, for example, in SharePoint, if you write some code or some SQL code and you create tempdb objects, and maybe internally SharePoint creates tempdb objects, every time an object is created, SQL Server has to update one particular page in the file inside tempdb called a PFS page. And you'll get what's called a page IO latch. You'll get a wait type that says I'm all locking, all the resources are waiting to update that page, because that page contains the definition of location of where those temporary objects are, and there's one per file. So if I've only got one file, I'm going to see a lot of latch contention on that page. This is what this is all about.
Cool. Okay, so this is another interesting thing too. So whenever you go to create a SharePoint database, you know, using through the central admin or doing it through PowerShell, it actually bases off the model, the system model database that we've got out there. So this, you know, this is a little bit annoying. And when I explained this to Pat, he was actually horrified that there was no tweaks or parameters you can specify to say, you know, what should be the default size of the database that you're actually creating. So what happens is you create a database through central admin or PowerShell. It looks at model, takes a setting off model, and uses that as a stamp for creating its own SharePoint database. So what that means is that you may want to consider actually changing the settings on model in the database instance that you're using. So if you know, for example, that you've got a lot of large content databases, you probably want to have those pre-grown anyway. So what you can do is change the settings on that, such that every time you create a content DB, goes out to the model, creates that. Now, there is a little bit of a gotcha associated with this, okay? What we've got is that when, as part of the model, you can go through and set what the initial size is, as well as what the auto growth and max size is. Unfortunately, the way that model works is that it only looks at the initial size, okay? So although we can go out and specify that, you'll still need to go back and tweak or change the settings on your SharePoint databases around what are the auto growth and what are the max size settings that you've got associated with that.
Okay.
So just be aware of that one. And something that you may want to consider doing. Okay. But it also kind of, you know, if you start to get a feel for this, this is specific to SharePoint. Okay. Or you may want to tweak the setting for SharePoint. So kind of hold that thought there for a little bit.
Right. Okay. SQL Server service account. So another hot topic that's often discussed is what account should I use for SharePoint? So I set up some BI infrastructure using SharePoint. I thought, you know, I can do this SharePoint stuff. It's just a few HTML5 pages, right?
Yeah, that's right.
All it is, right?
Yeah.
I could do that.
On it. Yeah.
So I made myself a SharePoint farm and some BI bits and pieces, and I had a bit of a play around, and I thought, I've got all this farm stuff, I've got all these databases, I ended up with services and databases on multiple machines, and I thought, you know what, I'm not a SharePoint person, I'm going to get in trouble here with security and authentication across these machines, because that I do know, right? So I did a really good thing, and I didn't discuss it with Wayne, and I just did it, and I used one account for everything, which was my domain admin, and Wayne said, no, you can't do that, Pat, so don't do that. But it worked for me, but no, that's absolutely not a recommendation. So what kind of service account should we use for SQL Server? So I've only ever seen once in all my health checks for customers, only one customer I've seen ever in 4 or 5 years that's used domain admin. Don't do that. About 1 in 2 customers and about half of the people in this room are running their SQL Server service account as local admin. Don't do that either. So have an account, set up a domain user account. When you install SQL, the appropriate permissions will come in through for that account. And then you can add things slowly as you find that you need them, and there are ways to do that. So it's just a domain user account for SQL Server. SharePoint will have its own rules about authentication, but SQL is SQL, and we have some rules around that too. So avoid local admin. There are a couple of policies that we're going to talk about and that you should need, and they're right here. You run a tool called Security Policy to set these policies. You need to be careful with GPOs that get pushed down from your domain controller because they might revert them or undo changes that you make. So these are the two things you really want to see. And we're going to talk. A little bit about that as we go through. I think I might just say a few words now.
Yeah, I'd say a few words now. So why would you want to do lock pages of memory and perform volume maintenance tasks?
Okay, I'm going to start with the easy one.
Okay.
I'm going to start with a perform volume maintenance tasks.
Because I should.
I'll take the second one first.
Okay.
So when SQL Server is allocating disk, either during a restore or during an auto growth, that could take a very long time because let's say your content database is very large and you're restoring it to a different server, or auto growth has kicked in and you're growing an extra, 50 gig or something in terms of your database file. Well, the default behavior of SQL Server is to write zeros to that file before it allocates it and brings it online for the database engine. So if you've got a very large database, or if you've got a very large tempdb, because tempdb gets recreated every time you restart SQL, this can take a long time, many, many minutes to do. So one of the things you might want to do, and it only applies to the database files and not to the logs, because there are some rules around the logs, is you want to give SQL Server the capability to not write those zeros and to just give me that disk allocation right here, right now, very, very quickly. So they'll still have the bit pattern on the files that they had before. So there are security considerations you need to consider, but it's very, very fast. And in order to make that happen, in order to avoid those zeros being written, you have to give SQL Server this capability. So all you do is you run secpol.msc, you run your security policy snap-in, and you add your SQL Server service account, which we've already said is a normal domain user account, and you add that account to perform volume maintenance tasks. You just add that account right here. And now when SQL Server makes that call to not write zeros, that's going to work. Did everyone follow along with that? Kind of makes sense, yep?
Yep.
Good. Well, that was the easy one.
No, the hard one.
So lock pages in memory. The reason I say it's hard, it's not so much, it's much that it's hard, but it's very contentious. And a lot of SQL engineers have spent a lot of time, including myself, discussing the pros and cons and the benefits of this particular setting. It's certainly something you're going to do in a test environment, and you need to be very careful with it. Now, what's happening is if Windows comes under pressure, if applications put pressure on Windows and Windows is under memory pressure, Windows does something called process trimming. It trims the working set of running processes. So it basically kicks memory out of VRAM, it kicks it out of memory and puts it out to the page file. That slows SQL down, and it slows down whatever's going to page, right? So what you can do in SQL Server is you can turn on a setting called lock pages in memory. And the way you do that is you add the SQL Server account to that lock pages in memory. Now what happens is when Windows says to SQL Server, I want you to give me some memory back from your buffer pool, SQL says, nah, it's mine. I'm going to keep it. You can't have it because I'm keeping it. That's what this setting means.
So you're a greedy... you should have the pie.
I should have the pies, right?
You should have the pies.
And you get the sheep with the handcuffs.
Oh, cool.
So
Velcro gloves? Sorry, I said that out loud in a voice.
Say it with you. Yeah, so do be a little bit careful with that, because that's okay if your server is dedicated to SQL. If SQL is the only application running on the box, then that's okay. That's probably not going to cause a problem. But if you are running other applications on that SQL Server machine, what's going to happen is Windows is going to kick in and say, give me memory back. And SQL's going to say no. And then those other applications that are running, and remember we said they shouldn't be running anyway, but they are, they're now putting pressure on Windows and they can't page. Windows doesn't get memory that it needs. And now things are really going to start to get ugly. So lock pages in memory is important, but it's something to just take a bit of care with. That's what it means. It means once SQL has got the memory in the buffer pool, it's going to keep it. That's what that is.
Cool.
Okay.
Thank you, Pat.
Okay. Are we good with that?
We're good.
Yeah? All right, let's move on just quickly. Very quickly, in fact. We've mentioned this a number of times. Keep SQL Server for SQL. Yeah. Don't let other people play other applications on the machine. It's a 101 requirement, really, from the SQL team, is if you've got a database server, it's for SQL. Patch levels, in case you didn't get the message first time around, you should be patching your SQL servers. Instance collation. It's this very long name of the collation that you need for your SharePoint databases. Yeah. Latin general, case insensitive, accent sensitive, Kana sensitive, and wide character sensitive. Okay. How did I know that? I didn't until yesterday, and Wayne said, I'm going to ask you that. So I went and checked it out.
Because I looked at these names, I always see these come up as saying, what is going to be the correlation of this? So all I know is that CI is case insensitive.
Yeah.
I kind of get that.
Yeah.
But what does AS really mean? What does KS really mean? And what does WS really mean?
So that's the long explanation of that collation name. But in terms of support, we also have a support article that I was looking at.
Yeah.
And that's quite interesting because what it said in the article I read this morning is that for your system databases on a SharePoint instance, we support, and it always comes back to support from my kind of perspective, we do support the one that's just case insensitive. So in other words, without the AS, KS, and the WS. But the support article went on to say that for all SharePoint databases, we only support this one with this full name. So it was very, very clear. So I can sit here and say, or stand here and say, for your SharePoint databases, that's what they need to be.
Yep, full stop, end of story, move on.
Okay, and that was quite interesting.
Yeah.
Authentication. Use Windows, that's it.
Apart from SharePoint Services 2013 Access
Wayne,
Services.
What are you guys doing? What's that doing?
Not me, it's the product team, man. So if you're doing Access Services 2013, unfortunately you do need mixed mode, basically due to the way that it connects through to the database. So I know it's one of those requirements. A lot of the DBAs don't want, you know, mixed mode. If you're doing access services, get over it. You do need to have mixed mode.
When's the service pack coming out?
Yes.
So that's all my point really is that we're very strongly in favour of Windows authentication from a SQL perspective.
Yeah. So
let's switch over here.
Okay, we just need to pick up the time too. So
let's pick up the time too. Let's go back to my machine. We don't want to be there. Let's pick up the time. So we did that. We formatted a disk. I'm just going to show you very quickly. Once we formatted a drive, because I'm using SQL SVC account, and I've just formatted this drive, I need to give that account permissions to write to that drive because I thought I will create myself a SQL SVC account, rather than use admin or domain user, having told you that you really shouldn't, it wouldn't have been great form for me to stand here and and do that. I could have maybe done it, but I wouldn't have felt good about it. Yeah. So let's make sure that we do that. So we give the SQL Server service account full permissions to this tempdb disk that we've just allocated at 64K allocation unit sizes, right? That's kind of our first step. Then what we're going to do is we're going to want to go in and we're going to have a look at our tempdb and we're going to want to change it. Because if I look at tempdb, what we have is something that's not good. Because what's not good is the defaults. The defaults are a very tiny tempdb growing in very small pieces. And sometimes I'll go to a customer and I'll look at the reports that tell me how many autogrowths and there'll be thousands of very small autogrowths, all of which took between 100 and 200 milliseconds. So SQL spending all day growing its tempdb in little pieces. I see that about 1 in 10 places, so it's a common problem. So you don't want those defaults. And as Wayne pointed out before, you want something quite different. So how do we get something quite different? So what I've got here very quickly is a script. You can generate this with the GUI in Management Studio. You can add, move, and change files, and then say script. And this is a script that you will get. So let's just move a couple of these things out of the way quickly. You can read that at the back. It's not too small. A little bit small, thank you. Waving your hand a little bit. So let's go ever so slightly bigger. We want people to be able to see it. All right, so what we can do is alter database, and we're going to change the name of the file. We're going to change it because we're going to add files. I've got four logical files on my four CPUs, so I want to have four files. I'm going to make them all, I think, 1 gigabyte in size. So I go and alter them, and then I add three further files. So I've now got 1, 2, 3, 4 tempdb files of 1 gigabyte in size. Yeah, instead of that tiny little default that I had before, which really isn't going to work.
Yep.
Okay, and I'm also going to modify my log and make my log bigger to do that. And then finally, turn on this trace flag that I was talking about to make that file growth balanced. Now, the problem is, when I do that, although that's taken place in SQL Server metadata, SQL Server knows that I've changed my tempdb now, but it's not using it yet. I can go ahead to verify where are my tempdb files. I've written a little script here, and it will tell me quite happily that my tempdb files are on the E drive, but they're not. That's only from the system databases. That's metadata. That is not my current location of tempdb.
And you call SharePoint sad.
So what do I need to do? I need to restart my SQL.
Yeah.
So I need to make the DDL change, and then I need to restart.
So there's a comment in yesterday's sessions that they said whenever you make SQL Server changes, you should actually start and stop it twice because SQL's a little bit awkward. Is that still the case?
That's the case, but it's only there to support SharePoint because it's when we have difficult clients. That's where we
okay,
need to do
okay.
That.
So in theory, you're saying that you only need to stop and start it once?
For this particular case, you stop and start it once. And also be aware that we have made these files very large. So if we hadn't turned on that lock pages in memory, which we have here, I showed you that before. I won't do it now, but I could just right-click and add the user. This is the one where I need to add in my SQL Server service account and just add it in here so that it doesn't write zeros to those 1 gig files, because when SQL restarts to get allocated, 4 gig of zeros is going to take a while. Go get a coffee from Hamilton. Do they have coffee in Hamilton?
Well, anybody from Hamilton?
Yes, we do. Someone's awake.
Okay.
All right. So that's. I think that's enough of that. So I'll show you a couple more things very, very quickly. Configuring max memory.
Okay.
So here I'm just running spconfig and I'm changing the max memory. We talked about that. That's a very, very straightforward thing.
Do I have to start and stop SQL again?
Not in this case. Shouldn't usually have to do that.
Yeah. I like stopping.
You like to start and stop SQL?
Yeah, it makes me feel better.
Makes you feel good? All right, so let's move on. I think that's good enough.
Okay, cool. Okay, so moving on a little bit. So what we're going to look at now is what type of optimizations we can do from a SharePoint perspective, okay? So the first thing to think about, it's not really an optimization, but it's more of a guideline recommendation around setting up your connection strings. Now, the reason behind this is that, as we know, we want to have a bit of an isolation between SQL Server and SharePoint. Just makes it a little bit easier to maintain isolation, etc., associated with that. So essentially, we've got two options. We can either go with SQL aliases and or a mixture of DNSA records as well. Now, I did state here A records, not C name records. Any ideas why? Oh, piss off. This is for a SharePoint conference ticket to come to the SharePoint conference. Anybody know why you don't want to do C name? Kerberos authentication. Very good. So the reason behind that is that if you are going to do Kerberos, if you do C name, it causes a whole lot of pain because you're actually delegating to another delegation, et cetera, through. So it makes the delegation path a lot harder to set up your SPNs, et cetera. So generally, when we talk about doing SharePoint-type work and you're using DNS, as a rule of thumb, use A records where possible. So the other thing to think about, though, is that because we've got a lot of different types of databases within SharePoint, you really need to do some planning up front, part of your database design. So think about what type of databases you're using in SharePoint, like what are your content DBs, what are your service applications. Also look at what are their requirements around replication as well. So what that really means is that you do need to kind of look at that as part of your strategy for setting up your connection strings prior to actually getting the farm going. Now, the reason behind that is that you may want to move things around. For example, you may have an alias that you want to point to a SQL Server listener later on when you configure high availability. It's easier to change what the alias points to rather than having to drop the database, which is something that Neil did yesterday. Okay? So it's just one of those things that you need to think about upfront. The other thing you may want to consider too, if you start using different database servers around there as well, you can go into the central admin and change what is the default database server that SharePoint's going to use. The default, if that kind of makes sense, is the first server that you join to the farm. In fact, as part of that connection string, when you add the configuration DB, that becomes the default server. If you're splitting your different databases around different servers, okay, this is an easy way to move things around. So, the other thing that kind of comes into this too is naming standards. Okay, so no goods, right? Those DBAs that are out there, don't you hate going into Enterprise Manager and seeing all those names that have got GUIDs in them and you've got no idea where they've come from, right? Absolutely ugly. So the guidelines here, once again, it's not an optimization, but a recommendation is to try and get some type of naming standard in place. So things to consider are things like multiple farms. So if I've got more than one farm using my same database server, it may be a bit easier to go in there and look and say, right, that's all associated with farm, you know, this farm, all these other databases associated with this other farm. Also, if you're mixing around with regards to different environments, you may want to have some type of naming standard there which represents that environment. Now, as a side story, I've actually seen somebody go into Enterprise Manager, thought they were working in dev, in the development farm, and they started dropping some databases, realizing they actually connected to the wrong database server. They were actually dropping production
must have
database.
Been a SharePoint person.
It was a SharePoint. It was a SharePoint admin.
DBA would never have done.
Okay, so who? If we, not that you've ever done that, right? So if you kind of look at the SharePoint databases, they really fall into three categories: the configuration database, the content database, and the service applications. So this is an example naming standard that I personally use, which is basically to say that it's all SP for SharePoint, so I know it's a SharePoint database. F basically being farm 1, farm 2, farm 3. If I'm doing it in development, it'll be D1, D2, D3, TS, T1, T1, etc. And then if it's a config, content, --content, and --service for the service applications, etc. I mean, it doesn't really matter what standard you've got. The idea is that you actually have a standard associated with that. So just as a bit of a fun, I decided to have a look at a couple of different enterprise managers that we've got out there. So guess whose? Whose has got the GUIDs? Or lots of GUIDs? Okay, who thinks it's Pat on the left? Certainly is, right? Then you look at those lovely database names that I've got there, right? So obviously, approved.
What can I say?
What are you going to ask me about? Why have I still got GUIDs?
Why have you still got GUIDs?
That's a good question, Pat.
I thought it was a good question.
It's a good question. So why have I got GUIDs? I don't know, you know the answer. Now, the reason I've still got GUIDs as a database name in there is that SharePoint loves GUIDs. We've got Access Services, service application deployed in here, and unfortunately, when you have Access Services up and running, it uses the DB _GUID as its naming convention because it needs to have a unique database with it.
So Wayne, just a quick question here for the more kind of database folk. If I don't want these GUIDs, is it correct that I have to use PowerShell to create these databases?
Apart from the Access Services. So if you want to come up with this naming standard, it's a very good point. It does mean that you're going to have to provision your farms using PowerShell to adhere to your naming standards. Okay, it's the only way you can really do it. And most of the SharePoint admins do a lot of stuff in PowerShell. So just be aware of that. So moving on. So creating databases. This becomes a little bit of an interesting one. So if the SharePoint admin wants to go out and create the databases, essentially what they need is that they need to have an install account because we're being good SharePoint admin people. We're going to use a dedicated installation account. That account needs to have a SQL logon, and it needs to be DB created with security admin permissions on that. What will happen as part of that installation is that it will then basically install or specify out what the farm account is, and it will grant DB creator, security admin, DB owner permissions to that farm account. So that's all pretty well and good, okay? However, there's a lot of organisations out there whose DBAs do not like the SharePoint admin going anywhere near their SQL server. Quite common, right? So if that's the case, what we can do is get the DBA to do it. So they can go through and recreate all the service accounts, they can create the databases ahead of time. The one account that they do need to do is they do need to create the farm account, which does require SQL login with DB creator, security admin, DB owner. It then means that the SharePoint admin does need to use PowerShell to actually specify what the database is, and it will then connect through to it, to those pre-created databases. However, there is a little bit of a gotcha. If the DBA goes out and creates those databases, there is a couple of SQL Server settings that are specific from a SharePoint perspective. So when we create them through the central admin or through PowerShell via the SharePoint admin, it's going to do some little configuration twists and changes to those databases. So an example of that is something called auto-update and create stats. It's going to do something to it. So if the DBA is not aware of this, they may create those databases without those settings, which could mean we could get into trouble associated with that. So.
All right. Thanks, Wayne. Okay, let's move on to this topic, which I've been looking forward to, something I'd like to discuss with my colleague here. So, max degree of parallelism on a SQL server. So, how many CPUs can execute parallel queries? So I bought a machine. It's got 16 cores, 16 logical CPUs. I run a SQL Server query. SQL query engine does something called an execution plan, and it produces a cost for that plan. So it runs the engine, the optimizer will run through different alternatives for how to execute that particular SQL query. It won't do it forever. It'll do it for a short time, find one that it likes, and stops. And then it will compare the cost of that serial plan to something called the cost threshold for parallelism. And if it's below that, it will use that plan. But if that serial cost is too high, if it's above that threshold, SQL will then go and generate what's called a parallel plan across multiple CPUs and then compare the cost of those two plans. If the parallel plan is cheaper, that's the one it's going to run. So it's now going to run that plan or that query potentially, depending on how I've set this default, and that this parameter in the default is zero, which means use all the CPUs. So potentially one query could use all the CPUs a period of time.
Nice feature, Pat. But...
However...
But...
in SharePoint...
max deop needs to be set to one. Okay, so you're probably thinking, why is the reason behind that? Now, we're going to go into a little bit more detail on that. However, the bottom line is it does need to be set to one. And there's another but. Okay. When you're installing SharePoint, what it will do is that it will attempt to set max degree of parallelism. This is for 2013, so if you've done this in 2010, you could get away with this. In 2013, what it will do is it will attempt to actually change the setting to one when you do create a new configuration database or create a new farm up there. Now, what it will also do is that if you've got permissions to set that to one on the database server, it will, and it will not tell you. Okay, so it's a little bit of a gotcha associated with that. So for all of you, the SharePoint admins that have got rights out to your SQL server and they've installed the farm, and it's the 2013 farm, max degree of parallelism is now set to one on those.
We've got that right. Set to one. Take my Rolls Royce. Take out the engine. Go find one of my sheep. Stick it in the car.
With the handcuffs.
I'll stop at that point. That's a requirement. That's where it has to be. And I understand that because of the work profile that SharePoint's using. And we do have many customers that have needed to turn off the max degree of parallelism in certain environments because of this problem that can come along. So let me talk briefly about that. The pure SharePoint guys in the room have got a little excuse to go have a little snooze at this point, because now we're getting into SQL internals. So when SQL runs a parallel plan, let's say I've got four CPUs, and I've been a good DBA, and I've kept my statistics and my data distribution up to date, like all you guys do religiously. So SQL, when it gets a parallel plan, will take the number of rows that it's estimated that it's going to get, and they'll be correct because of that same reason we just explained, and it will allocate 1/4 of those rows against each of those four CPUs. So I've got SQL knows it's going to get 4 million rows, and will give them 1 million each across four CPUs. Now, if one of those CPUs happens to be slower than the others, maybe because it's hyper-threaded or virtualized in some cases.
Or it's processing a SharePoint query.
I'm glad you said that. I'm not allowed to say that. Or it's processing a SharePoint query. What can happen is that one of those CPUs or one of those processors takes a lot longer to retrieve that same amount of rows than the other CPUs. This problem is so common, it's actually got a name. It's called the long pole problem, and it's been a challenge with SQL Server for a long time. And the way SQL Server works is once it's spread out this work across these four CPUs, it uses an NT exchange. It uses a Windows exchange to synchronize those four pieces of work back together so it continue with the plan. And the way it implements that Windows exchange in terms of SQL Server is a wait type, and it's called a CX packet wait. So you see lots of CX packet waits when you run parallel plans. They're not a problem because they're the wait type associated with a parallel plan, but if you see lots of them and they're growing, you're probably suffering from this this challenge. And this is how you'd see them. You can run a query from SysDMOS wait types and wait stats and look at your wait types. And if you see CX packets way up there as one of your highest wait type, you're suffering from this imbalance of parallel queries.
It's
not in SharePoint because you've turned it off.
Yeah,
right?
Unless you've turned it back on and SharePoint is now actually running on this. So this could be a very common cause of a 2TN environment as well.
Okay. So just to be clear, Wayne, we're saying max DOP for one, right?
One, get over it.
Get over it.
Yep. So what this basically means then is that if we kind of look about all these particular tweaks and things that we're doing, what it really means is that from a database instance perspective is that it's almost like the old, I'll hit that there. We do need to have a dedicated SQL Server just for the SharePoint databases. Okay, don't have anything else on there. A lot of the types of optimizations that we're doing from a SharePoint perspective may not be appropriate for other type of systems. Okay, so as a general rule, it's like Lord of the Rings, one ring to rule them all type thing. Looks right.
You noticed my machine was Sauron and Mordor was my domain.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Okay. In fact, we're running out of time, so let's skip through that.
All right.
Okay, so let's continue on. So I'm just a little bit conscious. So maintenance plans, back to you.
All right, so let's talk about database maintenance plans. We want to save a little bit of time for questions at the end. There is also a general question session later tonight.
Which is in 15 minutes.
In 15 minutes, so let's speed up. Maintenance plans. What do we need to do to keep our SQL servers healthy? So the main thing we need to do to keep our SQL servers healthy is to keep our indexes healthy.
I thought it was to keep SharePoint off them. Sorry.
To keep SharePoint off them. Hey, you said it. So you have to keep your indexes healthy so that SQL chooses them in when it's figuring out execution plans. To keep them healthy, you need to do two things. You need to keep them what's called defragmented, and you need to keep the statistics up to date. SharePoint's a bit different. SharePoint does a lot of that work itself. I've looked into this a little bit, and there is a stored procedure.
Yeah, we'll cover that.
We'll cover that. Yep. All right, so that's what we need to do. We need to keep it up to date. We need to run DBCC checks. Our requirement is that you run them every 7 days. That's our Microsoft requirement. You run DBCC checks against all your databases on a minimum, maximum, 7-day period.
Yep.
Backups very quickly, database backups for SharePoint. There was another session on BPM, right,
BCM.
For SharePoint.
Yep.
It's already happened? It
happened yesterday.
Okay, so there's a lot of prior art and specifics around the backup of SharePoint databases. Transaction logs, though, you need to back them up. It's like any other SQL Server database. It's in full recovery mode. You need to back up your logs. If you don't back up your logs, bad things will happen. The bad things are that the logs will grow to get to be the size of your disk, then your SQL Server will stop, and then you'll get sent on a nice long holiday. because you won't be appreciated.
Oh.
So that's quite a good thing.
That's
right?
Motivation.
So you don't need to back up your logs. How often do I back up my logs depends on your service level agreements, because the window of backup for your logs is exactly your potential data loss in terms of your recovery point in your service level agreement. So if I back them up every half an hour, there is a potential, if I can't back up what's called the tail of the log, to lose half an hour's data. And that's a conversation you have as part of your operations and exit interview for your holiday. So again, there was a session on continuity management in terms of databases. Yeah. So it is more complex than...
So the key point here is that you should obviously back up your logs. That kind of goes without saying, because that keeps the log files small. The issue you've got here is, what do you do about your databases? So we've basically, there's two ways of doing this from a SharePoint perspective. We can also do a SharePoint backup as well. So really what you need to be in correspondence between the DBA and the SharePoint admin to understand what the BCM requirements are and, do what's appropriate there. Because there is some things that the SharePoint backup will do that you can't actually do from a database backup perspective. Okay.
So well, SharePoint breaks, we just copy our documents back off the file
share,
right?
That's one. Yeah, right. Thanks. Okay, so the next thing is around this auto-create and auto-update stats. They should already be turned off for SharePoint. So the reason behind this is that auto-create statistics will modify the database schema. Now, this is a bad thing. SharePoint doesn't like anybody touching its database schema. It doesn't even like SQL Server touching its database schema. So the issue here is...
mutual, Wayne.
So if you do this, it is unsupported and it will break upgrades. Okay, so don't do it. Do not do it. So this is one of those things is, if you've got your DBAs creating your databases for you and you're connecting through to them, this is something you need to actually go through and turn off. So with regards to update statistics, it can cause the queries to recompile and can lead to some random and unacceptable performance issues associated with that. We really need to speed up.
Okay, so speeding up, Moraine's telling me this a number of times, index fragmentation, high CPU, pages are out of order, read ahead scans, they take a lot longer to run, SQL Server has to follow pointers to extra pages, so you need to keep them clean, and the SharePoint jobs are doing that. Detecting fragmentation is a query here on the board. The column over on the far left-hand side is showing us very, very high fragmentation. You should run this from time to time to see whether you have fragmentation on your system. Yep. What do we do about it? That's over to you, Wayne.
Well, the good thing is that we actually have got some SharePoint Health Analyzer rules that will go through and actually detect this for you. So these are on by default, and they'll go through and do some of this index, defragmentation, et cetera, associated with this. What it does behind the scenes is it does run a stored procedure called PROC update statistics. Now, unfortunately, that's not available on all of the databases, and I know Pat's going to ask me which of the databases it's not on, so I did actually do a bit of a check. So some of the databases it's not on is something like the BDC, the profile, the search admin, analytics, and links, the secure store state, user profile, sync, and usage. What that means is that if that stored procedure is not actually in there, it's not going to be executed, so SharePoint's not going to worry about it as part of these Health Analyzer rules. So what that means is that you should actually include doing that particular thing as part of your maintenance plans that you've got in there.
Okay.
Move on.
Moving on, DBCC check we've talked about. You can run DBCC check so that it automatically fixes pages. That's what we would typically do. However,
Not supported.
So don't do that with SharePoint databases. Run DBCC checks, but not with repair. You can't have any auto fixes. So how do we get our broken SharePoint databases back, Wayne?
Well, if you come across this, it's basically game over, okay? You're back to a restore. There is no supported way, if you come across this, okay, that if you need to run DBC check DB with repair, you're unsupported, it's game over, back to your backups.
Which takes us straight back to that business continuity management and your backups.
Yep.
You should also do this other little thing that's here. Here's another query. We can make these slides. I'm sure we'll make these slides available.
The slides are available.
But here's a little query here that the DBA can run on a periodic basis, which you should be running.
Yep.
Maybe once a week or once every few days. Every time SQL gets a corrupted page, it will write an entry to this table. You can just go and run that query and it should be empty. If it's not empty, you've got a page that's broken or corrupt. You would normally use DBCC with repair, but not in this situation.
Right. Back to your backups.
You'd restore your backup and then you'd manually delete the row. That's a DBA job. It won't do that. So you are responsible for keeping that table content in sync with your database.
Yep.
Other stuff, very, very quickly, before Wayne tells me a third time that we need to hurry up.
Hurry up.
Do turn off auto shrink. Never do that. That causes very, very high fragmentation and will bring your database performance to its knees. Don't rely on auto growth. We've talked about that. Have some maintenance windows for your service level agreements. I'm sure in that business continuity session you talked a lot about that. You need to factor your maintenance windows into those discussions because they're downtime. And if you don't include them up front, your opportunity to get them later is significantly reduced. Your fill factor. Fill factor for the default for SQL Server is zero, which means fill all the pages up. SharePoint's a little bit different. You only want to fill 80% of the pages up.
Correct.
So there's another requirement that we see.
So we're ready for the demo.
All right.
Summary. So what we've done is hopefully, you know, you can start having a little bit more meaningful conversations between the SharePoint admin and the DBA. You know, things around optimizing SQL Server, et cetera, for that. And hopefully, you know, you may have learned something new or consolidated your knowledge on a few other things. So with that, we've got the sessions, and we need to sprint across the road for the expert panel.
But you do need to fill out some evals.
Evals, right. You do evals as well. So that's us.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
Oh, we've got some prizes. Any one question?
Please do your evals before you disappear.
So the question to that is, so are you saying you've got a SQL Server instance which has got other data, other uses on it? Okay, so some of that may not, so some of those optimizations are not good for some of those other systems, like max degree of parallelism is a classic one. So they may not be, so that's why we kind of say keep SQL Server just for SharePoint. You can have a...
No. In that particular case, your report server, so you need to be careful with reporting services. Very quickly, you guys are leaving. Reporting services, the problem you get into is using the word reporting services. That has two components, a web server component and a database component. The web server component should run on your web tier, shouldn't run on your database server. That's not the place to run it, right? They do, and that's incorrect. They shouldn't do that. They should run it on a web tier where they can load balance it behind a load balancer.
Okay. We're going to take one last question.
We'll take one last question.
And then, follow us across the road to the next session.
Gentleman in the white shirt. Or white checky shirt. Yep. Yeah.
In terms of the max degree of parallelism, is that a server-wide setting or is that an
instance. You can run multiple instances. But again, you know, we prefer you to dedicate your infrastructure to SharePoint.
Doesn't matter.
Does what require enterprise issues?
SharePoint does not require enterprise, but there is reasons why you may want to go with enterprise, such as the conversion.
If you've got more questions, come along to this panel session, which is in which room, Wayne? Yep. It's across the street.
Across the road, right? Somewhere.
All right, in the Marlborough room. Yep. Thank you.